Today is Friday, October 8th, and you're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Gene Adolfo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, U.S. President Biden ramps up push for vaccine mandate.
I'm calling on more employers to act. My message is require your employees to get vaccinated. With vaccinations, we're going to beat this pandemic finally.
Plus, Taiwan president vows to defend country against China.
Taiwanese President Tsai Ing-wen on Friday had tough talk for Beijing after a recent surge in Chinese aircraft flying into the island's air defense zone.
Also, UN warns of gross rights abuses in the Philippines. Our top story today is in Afghanistan. A Taliban police official say at least 100 people have been killed and wounded in a mosque explosion targeting Shiite Muslims in northern Afghanistan. Dost Mohammed Obaide says the, quote, majority of them have been killed, unquote. There was no immediate claim for the blast in Kunduz province, but Islamic State militants have long history of attacking Afghanistan's Shiite Muslim minority. If confirmed, the death toll in Friday's attack would be the highest in an attack by militants since U.S. and NATO troops left Afghanistan at the end of August and the Taliban took control of the country. U.S. President Joe Biden is making another push for companies to require their workers to get vaccinated, following the vaccine mandate for businesses he announced last month. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Widaskuwara has this report.
This week, Southwest became the latest U.S. airline to require employees to be inoculated against COVID-19, following an order by the Biden administration in September requiring vaccination or weekly testing for employees of large companies, federal workers and contractors, as well as healthcare personnel.
I'm calling on more employers to act. My message is require your employees to get vaccinated. With vaccinations, we're going to beat this pandemic finally. Without them, we face endless months of chaos in our hospitals, damage to our economy, and anxiety in our schools, and empty restaurants, and much less commerce.
President Joe Biden was in Chicago, Illinois, Thursday, visiting a construction site run by a firm that requires vaccinations for its workforce. Public health experts say these mandates have reduced vaccine hesitancy. While about half of the 50 U.S. states enacted similar mandates, some Republican governors have sued the administration, contending the requirement violates personal freedoms. Legal experts say this is not a defensible argument, considering existing requirements for other vaccines, such as measles and polio. Despite the vaccine being free and readily available, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reports that only 65% of the population has had their first shot. According to a recent Gallup poll, 92% of Democrats say they have had at least one shot, compared with 56% of Republicans. Some who refuse the vaccine have applied for exemptions based on religious beliefs, including Anna Perry, a physical therapist in a New York hospital.
I was a COVID provider for the last year and a half. I didn't come down with it. I believe that God protected me the whole time.
More than 700,000 people in the U.S. have died from COVID-19, a milestone marked by an exhibit of white flags and the tolling of church bells at the Washington National Cathedral. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
3 years after the murder of Washington Post columnist and U.S. resident Jamal Khashoggi in Saudi consulate in Istanbul, human rights activists and many others around the world are furious the United States has failed to sanction Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, who is accused of ordering the killing. VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain looks at what has changed in the U.S.-Saudi relations under the Biden administration.
It was 3 years ago that Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi walked into the Saudi consulate in Istanbul to obtain paperwork for his planned wedding, but never came out. His friends and admirers held a vigil last week for the murdered journalist on the National Mall in Washington. His fiancée, Hatice Cengiz, unveiled a portrait of Khashoggi made from his columns in the Washington Post. Cengiz blames Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, known as MBS, for ordering Khashoggi's brutal murder and dismemberment inside that consulate.
MBS took Jamal from me and the entire world. Will you hold him accountable or will you reward his murderers?
U.S. intelligence agencies have concluded that the carefully planned and orchestrated murder of Khashoggi could not have taken place without the knowledge of the powerful Saudi crown prince. Salman has denied any involvement. During his presidential campaign, then-candidate Joe Biden criticized the Trump administration's close embrace of the Saudi crown prince and vowed to make him a pariah. Stephen McInerney is with the Project on Middle East Democracy.
He said very clearly that he was going to treat the Saudi regime like the pariah that they are, and he's done very much the opposite. He's maintained the status quo with less of the sort of superficial, showy embrace that we got from Trump, but he's basically going back to the pre-Trump status quo of embracing the Saudi regime, not over the top in public, but completely unabated in terms of transactions and weapon sales.
Striking a very different tone than his predecessor, President Joe Biden has said he will not deal directly with the crown prince, but he did send his national security advisor, Jake Sullivan, to meet with him in Riyadh last week. Peter Jewell is the co-editor of the Liberal Patriot newsletter.
Of course, I've seen that National Security Advisor Sullivan brought up the murder in his meeting with the Crown Prince. The Crown Prince is upset that he doesn't get the recognition he feels he deserves for his reforms that he has put in place. So I think that there's something of an impasse there.
Jewell said Khashoggi was an influential person in Saudi Arabia and that he had close ties to the Saudi royal family before he became increasingly critical of the Crown Prince.
That's VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent, Cindy Sain. The expulsion of 8 members of Russia's mission to NATO is not linked to a particular event, but the alliance needs to act in the face of, quote, malign, unquote, Russian activity, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said on Thursday. Stoltenberg said the 8, whose expulsion was announced on Wednesday, were, quote, undeclared Russian intelligence officers, unquote.
We have withdrawn the accreditation of 8 members of the Russian mission to NATO who were undeclared Russian intelligence officers. And this decision is not linked to any particular event. The decision to withdraw the accreditation of 8 members of the Russian delegation to NATO was done based on intelligence. It was done because these are undeclared Russian intelligence officers. And we have seen an increase in Russian activities, not least in Europe, and therefore we need to act.
That's NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg. The Kremlin said on Thursday NATO's move to cut the size of Russia's diplomatic mission undercut hopes that relations could be normalized and dialogue resumed with the U.S.-led alliance. Kremlin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov told reporters, quote, there is an obvious inconsistency in statements by NATO representatives about their desire to normalize relations with our country and in their actual actions, unquote. Peskov said NATO's action did not suggest relations could be normalized, quote, in fact, these prospects are almost completely undetermined, unquote. In 2018, in the wake of the poisoning of former Russian double agent Sergei Skripal in England, NATO withdrew an agreement for the appointment of 7 staff accredited to the Russian mission to the alliance and denied pending accreditation requests for 3 others. NATO also reduced the maximum size of the Russian mission by 10 people from previous 30. Taiwan does not seek military confrontation, but will do whatever it takes to defend its freedom, President Tsai Ing-wen said on Friday, amid a rise in tensions with China that has sparked alarm around the world. Ryan Chang of Reuters reports.
Taiwanese President Tsai Ing-wen on Friday had tough talk for Beijing after a recent surge in Chinese aircraft flying into the island's air defense zone.
Taiwan does not seek military confrontation. It hopes for a peaceful, stable, predictable, and mutually beneficial coexistence with its neighbors. But Taiwan will also do whatever it takes to defend its freedom and democratic way of life.
Taiwan has been seeking the support of other democracies as a standoff with China worsens. This week, it's hosting a group of French senators and former Australian leader Tony Abbott. Beginning last Friday, around 150 Chinese warplanes, a new high in cross-strait tensions, flew sorties near Taiwan. Although that appears to have ended, Taiwan has complained of activities like that for more than a year, calling it grey zone warfare. Taiwan says that's designed to wear out the island's armed forces and test their ability to respond. China claims Taiwan as its own territory. The self-ruled island is seeking a bump in its defense budget over the next 5 years, mostly for naval weapons. And now sources told Reuters small numbers of U.S. Special Operations soldiers have been rotating into Taiwan to train Taiwanese forces. They declined to say how long this had been going on, but suggested it predated the Biden administration. The Wall Street Journal also published details on the training, citing unnamed U.S. officials on Thursday. The Pentagon, which in the past hasn't disclosed details about U.S. training or advising of Taiwanese forces, did not comment on the deployment.
That's Ryan Chang of Reuters. U.S. plans to reopen a consulate offering diplomatic services to Palestinians in Jerusalem has been met with outrage from Israeli government, and one lawmaker has proposed a law blocking the move. This report is produced by Zachary Goldman with Reuters.
Plans to reopen an American consulate in Jerusalem serving Palestinians have prompted pushback from the Israeli government. The administration of U.S. President Joe Biden says it wants to reopen the consulate to repair relations with the Palestinians after it was closed by then-President Donald Trump. But right-wing Israeli lawmaker Ner Barkat has proposed a bill that would outlaw the planned reopening, which he said would undermine Israel's claim to Jerusalem.
And we must do everything we can to maintain the unity of the city of Jerusalem. Such a move impedes and can actually damage, strategically damage, the relationship between Israel and the United States.
Barkat was mayor of Jerusalem when Trump broke with decades of U.S. policy and moved the embassy there from Tel Aviv. The move exhilarated Israel's right-wing government, but provoked violent clashes between Palestinians and Israeli troops. A year later, the U.S. shuttered the Jerusalem consulate, prompting Palestinian negotiator Saeb Erekat to say this.
This is a day of infamy for American diplomacy.
Israel's new unity government, led by Prime Minister Naftali Bennett, also opposes the reopening of the consulate, potentially boosting the chances of passage for Barkat's legislation.
Never did we give anybody consent to open up a diplomatic mission for Palestinians in the city of Jerusalem.
U.S. officials have been largely reticent on the issue, saying only that the reopening process remains in effect. Asked whether precedent existed in U.S. diplomacy for opening a mission over objections of a host country, the State Department's Office of the Historian declined to comment.
That was Zachary Goldman with Reuters. UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Michelle Bachelet reports widespread human rights abuses in the Philippines continue to be committed with impunity across the country. Her report has been submitted to the UN Human Rights Council. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Philippines President Rodrigo Duterte's war on drugs has claimed thousands of lives. Official government figures last year put that number at nearly 6,000. Human rights organizations claim more than 20,000 have been killed since 2016, largely by the country's security forces. Human Rights Chief Bachelet notes some small measures are being taken to prevent extrajudicial killings. These include the mandatory use of body-worn cameras and alternative recording devices in police operations. Despite these steps, she says she continues to receive disturbing reports of severe human rights violations and abuses, including killings by security forces and police in counter-narcotics and counter-insurgency operations.
Killings by alleged vigilantes also continue to be reported, with virtually no information about any form of accountability. We have also received reports of abuses by the New People's Army of the Communist Party of Philippines, including the killing of civilians, recruitment of children, and extortion.
Bachelet condemns the harassment, threats, and killings of human rights defenders and other activists. She says security forces and other violators rarely are held accountable for these crimes.
I remain deeply concerned by continued report of so-called red tagging of human rights and environmental defenders, journalists, union activists, church workers, and humanitarian workers, publicly labeling them as communists with a view to discrediting their human rights work and encouraging attacks against them.
The High Commissioner is calling on all sides to end the ugly rhetoric that is putting the lives and well-being of civic activists at risk. She says attacks against independent media, condoning extrajudicial killings and other violations and abuses must stop. She notes this is especially important now as the Philippines heads into an election year when political rhetoric can turn into violence. The Philippines presidential and vice presidential elections will be held next May as part of the country's general elections. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is the Voice of America. Iran's foreign minister says more rounds of talks with his country's regional arch-rival, Saudi Arabia, are needed to improve ties. The comments by the top Iranian diplomats on Friday came on the last day of his two-day visit to Lebanon. He had earlier said his talks with the kingdom have gone a, quote, good distance, unquote. He declined to offer details, saying only that the two sides have reached, quote, specific results and understanding, unquote, that would be announced at the right time. Germany's defense ministry says a company of the military's Guard Battalion has been suspended from official duty amid an investigation of initiation rituals, suspected sex abuse, and far-right activity. A ministry spokesperson said Friday the internal investigation covers, quote, several dozen, quote, soldiers. The Guard Battalion provides military honors during state visits and other formal events and has nearly 1,000 members.
This is Science in a Minute.
The cryosphere are the areas of Earth where water is found in its frozen form. According to the U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, the cryosphere includes the Greenland and Antarctic continental ice sheets, ice caps, glaciers, areas of snow and permafrost, as well as ice that is found in water. The National Snow and Ice Data Center says that the cryosphere also stores about 69% of Earth's fresh water supply. A new study published in the American Geophysical Union's journal, Earth's Future, suggests that our cryosphere decreased by more than 87,000 square kilometers each year between 1979 and 2016 due to climate change. The study, led by researchers at China's Lanzhou University, also proposes that most of the ice loss took place in the Northern Hemisphere. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Junaid Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. UN monitors probing Cambodia's human rights situation say increasing government repression against political opponents and civic activists is stifling people's fundamental freedoms. The report has been submitted to the UN Human Rights Council. We have Lisa Schlein again reporting for VOA from Geneva.
In presenting the report, UN Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet praises Cambodia's economic recovery policies and social protection programs for vulnerable people during the COVID-19 crisis. But she also slammed abuses by the government of Prime Minister Hun Sen. She says the government has given law enforcement sweeping powers to curb the pandemic. She notes the misuse of these powers is leading to the curtailment of people's human rights and fundamental freedoms.
By the time this report was prepared, my office had received credible reports that at least 110 individuals were held in pretrial detention and 16 received prison sentences through summary trials for violating COVID-19 restrictions. Since June, we have been informed of several hundred more reported arrests, exacerbating Cambodia's already serious prison overcrowding.
Bachelet says the Cambodian government keeps a tight grip on society, clamping down hard on civic activists and those perceived to be dissidents. She says the human rights situation has further deteriorated since she last reported on conditions in Cambodia in February. She says more than 60 members of opposition parties have been arbitrarily arrested and most remain in jail. She says at least 14 others have been physically attacked. She says human rights defenders are routinely harassed and intimidated, and trade union activists reportedly are denied the right to assemble peacefully.
We remain extremely concerned with the impunity for attacks against political activists and human rights defenders. Of particular concern are continuing threats of arrest and violence by senior officials against opposition activists hiding in Thailand. This must cease.
Bachelet urges the government to implement the juvenile justice law it adopted in 2017. This law provides alternatives to detention for young people under age 18, many of whom are still in prison. She also calls on the state to end the forced evictions of people who receive no compensation for the loss of their homes and land. She notes the state subsequently grants the land to individuals, including senior government officials and their families. Cambodia's ambassador to the UN in Geneva, An Sokern, dismissed the High Commissioner's report as being based on false claims. He said his country's response to COVID-19 did not restrict human rights. He noted that Cambodia was one of the few countries around the world that did not introduce a state of emergency. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
More than 26,000 African children under the age of 5 die from malaria each year, including more than 10,000 in Kenya, according to the World Health Organization. The WHO's backing of a malaria vaccine, Mosquirix, for children in sub-Saharan Africa has raised hopes of preventing many of these deaths. The vaccine proved effective in a pilot program in Ghana, Kenya, and Malawi. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
On Wednesday, the World Health Organization gave the green light for the use of the vaccine for children between 5 and 24 months of age in Africa and other regions prone to a high level of malaria transmission. This follows trials of the vaccine in Ghana, Kenya, and Malawi. The four-dose shot was administered to 800,000 African children. 30-year-old Salome Awur allowed her son, now 3 years old, to take part in the malaria vaccine trials in Kisumu County, Western Kenya. The mother of four said previously she will visit her nearest clinic four times a month to get malaria treatment for him. At the time, he was 12 months old. My son was given three jabs and malaria went down, she says. I never went back to the clinic seeking malaria treatment. I feel so good my children no longer get sick most of the time. That's why whenever I hear about vaccines, I run to get them because it helps a lot. WHO Chief Tedros Ghebreyesus described the malaria vaccine breakthrough as historic and one that can save the lives of tens of thousands of young people each year. According to the WHO, malaria affects more than 229 million people each year and kills more than 400,000. In Africa, more than a quarter of a million children die from the mosquito-borne disease. Earlier trials in 2015 showed the vaccine could prevent 40% of malaria cases and about 30% of severe cases. Bernhard Ogutu is a chief researcher at Kenya Medical Research Institute. He says Kenya's participation in the study proves the vaccine will work on the country's population.
If it is safe, you know it was done in your population and you know it is good for you. You are not relying on data from another population, but from your own population, so that you can confidently advise the government that we know this is safe for us, it works, and we approved and it was done by us, and we contributed to this development.
The first three vaccine doses are given a month apart when children are babies, and a final booster is given when the child is 1.5 years old. Ogutu has voiced confidence that Kenyan parents will vaccinate their children from malaria.
People have been asking, where is it now that we have been given a go-ahead by the WHO that we can now go for the rollout? I think now it is time to get to our people and tell them now it is available, and now it's a matter of procuring the vaccine and ensuring that it's available and we can start getting it to those who need it.
So far, there's no word on when the vaccine will become available to the general public. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
The Nobel Peace Prize has been awarded to journalist Maria Ressa of the Philippines and Dmitry Muratov of Russia. They were cited for their right for freedom of expression. The Norwegian Nobel Committee announced the winners Friday. The award is intended to honor an individual or organization that has, quote, done the most or the best work for fraternity between nations, unquote. Both winners have challenged the government of their countries and have faced criminal charges and threats to their safety. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a pleasant weekend.
Join me on the next Straight Talk Africa for my conversation with the U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, about the global fight against COVID-19 and what is at risk for Africa's women. I'll also speak to Fiona Atuwebwe from the World Health Organization about vaccine equity and plans to boost vaccine manufacturing in Africa. Join me, Heidi Adams,